Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take up social media with you. Talk about things like Kony 2012 and Pinterest and other current topics in social media with our guest, Don Stanley, faculty associate in life sciences communication, where I teach, but he teaches social media and web courses. He also is the owner of Three Rhino Media, and that's a social web and strategy business. So it's great to have him back. And certainly if you have questions for him as we move along today, I hope you'll join in. Do you use social media? Why or why not? What platforms do you use and for what? And how do different social media options suit your needs and wants? Have you noticed friends using it more? Well, those are some of the things we can talk about with Don Stanley, and I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can join in there as well. And Don Stanley, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Great to be back.
First of all, congratulations on your teaching award that you just won. That's a wonderful, it's an award that students are the folks who actually do the nominating. And so I think it's a particularly, it's a nice award to win when you know that students nominated you.
Absolutely. It's very humbling. And you were an award, so you won the same award as well.
Yeah.
So, yes, it means a lot to know that the students appreciate what you do and get recognized for it. It's very, very cool.
Well, last month there was a big controversy about a video, Kony 2012, that was done on behalf of the organization Invisible Children and dealt with child soldiers in Uganda. Went viral. How many? 100 million?
100 million views in 6 days. It was the fastest to 100 million views, so 6 days, and it was, yeah, mind-blowing.
Yeah, quickly, there were some serious questions that arose about the group and how the money that was raised was being used and what the real situation in Uganda is right now. What do we learn from this?
Well, one of the interesting things was, and the video is a 29-minute video that tries to highlight the story of this gentleman who was introduced to the story of Joseph Kony. And Kony is a guerrilla leader in Uganda area. He's not operating in Uganda now, according to the most recent news. But this gentleman wanted to bring awareness to the situation. And so he made this video specifically targeted certain people via social media who, you know, before social media, he would have never got their attention to watch his video or pay attention to the cause, and ended up using these connections with these people and their networks to get 100 million views in 6 days. And I mean, it was amazing in terms of what it did. But a lot of the feedback, one of the things was that people weren't expecting it to do that well. And you got to be careful what you wish for and be, you know, we talk about this in business a lot. You got to be prepared for success. And sometimes, it comes on faster than you want. And some of the questions were, where does the money go? Because it asked for people to donate. And the goal of the campaign is to catch this gentleman, Joseph Kony, and to stop him from going around and kidnapping children, forcing young females to be sex slaves, forcing young boys to be boy soldiers, those types of things. But some of the controversy it was, again, about the money and where it was coming from, and also about, does this simplify? Is social media, because it's bite-sized, even though the video is a half an hour, does it overly simplify a complex issue and just saying, hey, we just go in there, we catch this guy, and all these problems are going to disappear? So it's a very interesting debates.
Yeah, and Robert and Green Bay, we'll get to you in just a second, but I wanted to mention sort of a more positive note in a way, the use of social media in Iceland.
Yes.
Using social media to rebuild its pretty shattered economy.
Absolutely. And yeah, the president of Iceland will actually connect with you, and you can actually go physically visit him and hang out with him. And Iceland is really trying to tell their stories using social media. And what they're doing is what's called crowdsourcing. They're allowing everybody in the community, very similar to a Wikipedia, to share their stories of why Iceland is so great, to try to attract tourists and people to come to the country. And it's really neat idea, and it seems to be gaining traction and doing quite well. And it's actually, I'd love to visit Iceland. I have to kind of tweet at the president to see if he'll fly me over there just to visit, maybe do a consulting job with him.
Oh man, Robert in Green Bay, let's go to you. Hi, Robert. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Oh, thank you. This is an interesting topic. I use a website called Postris, and it's a really easy design. Actually, it was just bought up by Twitter, so I hope it doesn't change too much. But the nice thing is you can set it up so it links over. You can just – it's a blog site, so I can put my blog on to that one site, and then once I hit enter or submit, it actually puts it out to my Twitter account and to my – Facebook account and to Google Plus or wherever else you want to send it to, WordPress, or they have a lot of different options. And then it's just because I don't go on Facebook very often, but it's just a nice place to put my stuff out there for my family to see. And it's just a one-stop quick shot, takes video, takes pictures. And it's just a good overall site that I'd highly recommend.
That's a great one. There's so many to pay attention to. Larry and I were talking about this before the show started, is that it's hard to know what to pay attention to. And one thing that's really cool with Postris, as you were saying, Postris, is that you can consolidate a lot of your activities on one site. So that's a fantastic recommendation.
It saves a lot of time instead of having to write one thing on Facebook, one thing on Blogspot, one thing on Postris, and one thing on Twitter. It's just one shot, and they all get up there.
Done. So. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Robert. You can join in, too, by the way. Maybe you've got a question, a comment, or a suggestion. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page, post there, at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Social media platform that's getting a lot of interest, I think, is Pinterest.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What is it?
It's a relatively new player in the game, and basically, what Pinterest it's a very visual tool that allows you to take any photographs you find and pin them to your Pinterest account. So basically, one of the challenges of using something like Facebook and Twitter, which are the two most popular social media tools, is you have a timeline where content's continually streaming past you, and it's hard to always pay attention to what's going on and pay attention to your favorite content. Well, Pinterest kind of took that into account, and what you can do is create these boards, and you can create boards very much like having collages on a wall in your home of the favorite things you like, based on any topic area. So you could, like, for example, the university is now using Pinterest. And one of the Pinterest boards during the NCAA tournament was the many faces of Bo Ryan. So they had pictures of Bascom Hall. They had pictures of campus in winter. And each of those boards, people can go and see any visual, any pictures that people want. It really started gaining popularity just in about November of last year, 2011. And as of this month, it's the third most popular social networking site in the world already, which is just unbelievable. Yeah. And it's interesting, and people are talking about the idea of how, you know, kind of what Robert was talking about. We have so much to pay attention to. We initially had blogs and lots of content. Then we went to Facebook, and Facebook's a little bit shorter than blog posts. And then we went to Twitter, which is 140 characters. And now we're down to just straight photographs, which Pinterest is.
So it's third. Who's one and two?
Facebook is definitely one, and you know that's estimates are by the end of July, early August, at 1 billion accounts on Facebook, with 500 million active on a daily basis. And one of the things that I always point out in the classes I teach is that Facebook is illegal to use in China. It's blocked and censored in China. So when you think about significant portion of the world's population isn't able to use it. You know, it's huge. And then the second most popular is Twitter. So Facebook number one, Twitter number two.
Back to Pinterest for a minute. What's your sense of it? I mean, are you Is it going to be useful and a lot of fun?
I think it will be. And one of the things I think we're starting to see is kind of like what we saw with television. We're both of the age where we remember there was three main mm-hmm. television stations
right.
with public television. But now that they're differentiated to so many, you know, there's, you know, Discovery Dogs, Discovery Channel Cats, Discovery Channel, you know, everything is so specialized. And I think that's what we're seeing with a lot of these social tools is where you had, you know, Facebook or you had... you know, going back sites like GeoCities, but now they're becoming more and more specialized to niche audiences. And Pinterest is what I really like about it. I'm not a heavy user of it. I always have to pay attention just to see for clients and for classes mm-hmm. if we need to use it. Is that it's very visual, and because of that, it makes it really easy to interact with. A lot of people are using it. It about in the United States, it's about 82% of the user base is female. So one of the heavy uses right now is like wedding planning or interior design, where you post ideas and concepts that you want for your wedding, which was one of the things with my students. It's really, really popular for that. Also ideas for home improvement projects. And so you can pin all of these things and then share, you can share them with anybody. You share them with a contractor, or some people are using them kind of like, registries for weddings and saying, here are the things I'd love to have for my wedding or for my baby shower, those types of things. But businesses are quickly jumping on and trying to figure out ways. I saw an advertisement by Lowe's home improvement stores, and they're on Pinterest. So they're, you know, pinning products and different home improvement stuff people have done with their products, those types of things.
Wow. So won't be long and there'll be not only Lowe's, but lots of lots of other companies. Don Stanley, our guest today, faculty associate in life sciences communication and owner of Three Rhino Media, a social web and strategy business, talking with him today about social media. Certainly inviting your questions and comments as we move along today. Do you use it? Why or why not? Maybe you don't use it. Maybe you have some reasons, and we'd love to hear those as well. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post questions, photos, comments right there. I'm Larry Mueller. Brittany DeAnda, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking social media with Don Stanley. Join us at 1-800-642-1234. Lori in Green Bay up next. Lori, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to share, I really do agree with, you know, your conversation today. I own several cosmetology schools, and one of the big trends that we're seeing from admissions is really moving beyond traditional admission methods, such as giving a campus tour, mailing an information pack, to actually having Facebook, Twitter, letting students know when their specials, when classes are starting, and really communicating to this whole millennium generation in a completely new way that is probably for a lot of us, you know, over 35, beyond what we might even be comfortable with or what we might be familiar with.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. And it's really interesting, too, because on campus, one of the big discussions I'm having with a lot of students is how this is changing how you look for jobs. It's completely changed what you can do in terms of being able to position yourself to get into schools, to be able to get into different professions, to make contacts. And I very much agree that as you go in that millennial generation, which is usually people 30, 35 and younger, people definitely expect the interactivity, be able to see things online, get a sense of place, and not only hear from the organization, but to be able to see other people's comments or feedback about a place. It's very interesting to know that, you know, you're seeing that in your business.
Right. I mean, we've actually had to completely revamp our website from the standpoint now that it has, you know, its Facebook section that scrolls on the side of it. Mm-hmm. It has access to Twitter. It has access to, you know, everything. We have to have separate Facebook accounts for the schools so that people can comment, ask questions. They are expecting postings from us. It is definitely an entirely new way of communicating, but I also think it's one that if businesses think they can ignore it, they can't anymore. It literally has gotten to the point that if you're a business and you don't have at least a representation beyond just a website, you're really going to miss out, and I would be hard-pressed to say in 5 to 10 years you're still going to be in business.
I totally agree. I think we're moving into what a lot of people will say is called the relationship economy, which is we do business with people we know, we like, and we trust. And social allows people to get to know us and interact with us as businesses, not only as individuals. And when you're not interacting, people feel like you don't care. And that is a huge, something that people don't really much appreciate.
Boy, Lori, it sounds like you've really embraced this.
Well, and I think we have to. And we have to all kind of get over the fear and the concern. And, you know, there is a lot of stuff that's being put out there. You know, businesses open themselves up when they have a Facebook page to having both positive and negative comments. But if you have some control over your media and you're paying attention to it, it really can be much more of a positive than a negative.
Oh, absolutely. And I totally – and people know that if they're seeing nothing negative – I actually just met with Joe Sorge, who runs a number of restaurants, including AJ Bombers in Madison and Milwaukee. Fabulous business using social media extremely effectively to grow their organizations. And he was talking about how when people – don't see, when they know you're filtering negative comments, they don't trust you because they know that no business is perfect. And he said what he really likes about the negative comments is that he can look at them as, oh, somebody's ripping on my business, or hey, this is a chance to get customer feedback and improve what we're doing and make changes and adapt. And when you approach it that way, it's a great place to interact and say, hey, you know, what if we did this, or what specifically didn't you like about your visit that we could improve? And again, you can find opportunities to improve rather than not embracing that.
Yeah. Lori, thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm enjoying the discussion.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much. Allison in Appleton, we turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm a college professor, and I happen to teach art. And just this semester with some advanced students, we began to use Pinterest as a way to sort of aggregate the images that my students are looking at. And in the past, they used to cut up magazines or bring in library books and things like that. But because I know that my students use the Internet so much, partly through our communication over Facebook, it just seemed like this was the easiest way to exchange ideas and information. And once we created our board, I found that my alumni, students who are still interested in the field, all began following the board. So they contribute and repin the images that my students pin, and it's actually creating a kind of community for the particular kind of art classes that I teach.
Wow.
So it's been very, very helpful to us.
That is a really cool application. So you allow the students can actually add to, do you have a class Pinterest account, or how do you actually do that?
Well, it's my Pinterest account, and they have one board that they have access I forget what the term is, but they're allowed to contribute to that particular board,
mm-hmm.
and they do so on a regular basis. Which for me as a professor is very good because I know that they're remaining engaged in the subject matter even when we're not in the room together.
Absolutely.
They can contribute images in the middle of the night or over the weekend or on spring break or whatever. And I know that they're still thinking about their projects and they're still thinking about things that they want to share with me or their classmates. It's been a completely positive experience so far.
I'm going to have to do that in my web class next semester. I didn't even think about that. And one of the things that I think is really interesting that you mentioned is the engagement with alums, that
right.
it maintains that connection. And it, you know, it's a great opportunity to network and for the current students to maybe get some insights into, you know, building relationships with people who are in the field. I think that's a really great example.
Oh, well, thanks, Allison.
We have been doing that on our Facebook page as well. I'm the chair of our art program at the University of Wisconsin Green Bay, and we do have a Facebook page that is exactly for that purpose, to help our alumni network with our current students. And that's working out quite successfully as well.
Outstanding.
Thanks, yeah. Allison.
Thank you.
Yeah, really appreciate the your calling. Lots of good calls today. You can join in, too. Maybe you have a question, comment, or something to share or add to the conversation as we talk social media with Don Stanley. The number 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post there. Amanda in Eagle River, it's your turn. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, I'm just calling in because I'm a fourth grade teacher in the Madison area, and I use social media in my classroom to engage my students. And also, what I love most about it right now are my students are actually able to communicate with authors via Twitter. And my students are having real-time conversations as they're reading the books with authors, just trying to determine author's purpose and all sorts of different learning activities.
Wow, that's wonderful. So you use Twitter. Anything else?
Oh, yeah. I'm a pretty heavily tech classroom. My students use iPads. We use a Zapped app, which creates mini web pages for the students to kind of showcase their learning so their parents can check out their web page after the day. And we stick mostly to Twitter, and I use Pinterest as a teacher. Just to, the education segment of Pinterest is incredible. I'm able to organize a lot of different lessons and different teacher blogs to be able to put to use in the classroom. And I think even though my students are 9 years old, that's the best way to reach them is at a technology level. They're so it's so ingrained in them that they don't even question how to use it. It's like they're born knowing how to use it anymore.
Yeah. Can I come to your class? I want to take your class.
It sounds wonderful.
I would love it.
Do all the students then have iPads?
No, unfortunately, we don't have the funding for that. But I have 4 personal iPads in the classroom that I use from our super generous PTA. Really helped us out with that.
Wow.
And my students are able to use those. And then we also use a Kindle Fire. And it motivates the students so much. And they are just so thrilled. And then I'm also able to keep in really close contact with the parents because the parents are seeing what the kids are up to on a regular basis.
And I think the other example that my students in my social media classes are always amazed by, they have to do an interview they create a blog and they have to do an interview with somebody who's significant in their area of interest, is how responsive and how accessible authors, big name people are. I mean, it's amazing how much that opens up the ability to make connections with people that, you know, used to not be accessible.
It's really incredible. I have a fourth grade girl who's been reading books by Chris DeLacy, and she comments to him almost every other week, and he writes back telling her, just wait until the next book comes out, and she just jumps for joy every time he writes back.
Well, and teaching kids to build that confidence to reach out and to connect. And I see that again with my university students as well, is just seeing that what these tools can do to build those connections. I was telling Larry, I was just on a trip down to Knoxville, Tennessee, and I've become friends via Twitter with an author, a gentleman who's in the Forbes top 50 social media influencers in the world. And, you know, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, he probably wouldn't have paid much attention to me. And he had me down as a guest, which was just, it's amazing. So even I get excited about it. You know, it's neat to hear the fourth graders are getting that type of experience, because that's the world that they're growing up in.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Amanda. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you should. I'd actually love to even hear more about what you're doing. I hope you'll send me an email.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Shoot me an email.
Yeah. And
I'll have my kids send you an email.
Oh, yeah.
That's perfect. At Mueller@wisc.edu.
Yeah.
And then, I know it well. I will be sending you an email. Thank you.
Thanks,
Amanda. Yeah, and I'd love to chat about it at some point, too. Maybe come in and see what you're doing.
Excellent. I'd love it.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it very much. Wow. Now, there's an outstanding teacher. And I didn't ask her age, but I bet it's 30 or less.
Yeah.
Or maybe 35 or less.
What an experience for the students to have that type of interactivity. I think that, you know, I think probably the biggest benefit I've seen from social in the classroom as well in business is the ability, again, to connect with people on a real level, and in particular, people who we see as thought leaders, as major players in different arenas that will actually take the time and are human. And it's neat to see that young kids, again, getting that experience and being able to see that, you know, don't be afraid to reach out. Guys, I have a 9-year-old as well. And, you know, trying to build that confidence in them, I know how important that is don't be afraid to ask questions and seek out these people and go directly to them, and how cool that is that she's doing that. That is wow.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Sarah and Slinger, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I only caught the tail end of that, of the last fourth grade teacher talking, but I'm an elementary education major in Mankato, Minnesota. I'm actually driving back. But I would like you guys to make a comment about the cautions you need to take, especially right now I'm doing field experiences, and our principals are looking at our Facebook pages, and, you know, some of us have gone through and taken some of those not-so-appropriate pictures down, mm-hmm. or some of our not-so-appropriate statuses off of our pages. And I'd like you guys to make some comments about that and some advice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think, well, and this is actually one of the interesting current controversies that came out about 2 weeks ago, is employers who are looking to hire requiring people to give them their Facebook usernames and passwords, and allow the potential employer to go through their Facebook pages, which is illegal. So there's been a lot of flack, but employers are, and potential employers are, getting more animate about wanting to see everything. And I think you hit on that perfectly. We talk about this a lot in the classes. You have to understand that once something is posted, it's out there no matter what. Even if you mm-hmm. think you delete it, it can potentially be found. And, you know, I don't know what it's like to be a teenager nowadays, because it's got to be so hard, you know, things that you might talk about with your friends or whatever, that now it can be public. But what I'll do a lot in my classes is do case studies of people who have put things up and ended up getting in trouble, and just reminding them, which is about all you can do, that anything you post is public. And you should, the best analogy a friend of mine, Mari Smith, gave me once was to imagine you're in a traffic jam going down a road really, really slowly, and there's a huge billboard on the side of the road, and your mother's in the car with you, and everything you post is scrolling on that billboard for her to see and everyone else to see. And don't put anything that you would be embarrassed to put up, and think of it as a professional, a platform, you know, even in terms of some of the interactions with friends, is just being cautious about what you do and what you say. And it'll be interesting to see. I think there will be some more leniency as we move on, that people are like, well, of course, you know, people in normal conversations might say something controversial or something, mm-hmm. you know, use different language, etc. So maybe people will get more understanding as time, or more tolerant, I should say, as time passes. But I wouldn't count on that. I'd still
know
when you're thinking of somebody professionally reviewing your content in any way at any time. You never know who's looking at your stuff, and you know, just try to present your best face in terms of how you want to be perceived professionally.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling, Sarah. Appreciate it. We had an email from Barb in Eagle River, and this is back to Pinterest. Foodies find it very useful. After discovering Pinterest, she's had lots of great recipes. People pin and comment on their favorite recipes. Yeah.
I can't do that because I want to eat all the time.
Yeah.
But yes, that's another great example of how people can use it, and, you know, things that, like I said, like a cookbook, you know, you just go and see what people are pinning as recipes, or, you know, it's so interesting.
Jeff in Winona, Minnesota. Hello.
Morning.
Morning.
I belong to a highway department, and we've been using Facebook and Twitter to update residents about our construction projects.
Mm-hmm.
When the project starts, we'll develop a Facebook page and a Twitter feed, and we regularly update those with contact numbers, lane closures, what's going on that day, just to keep the residents updated, and it's been quite popular.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
And that's another great example of how to use these tools to provide a service. And you know, knowing that so many people are using them, what a great example, Jeff, of using it in a way that's helpful and useful for people who would be in your audience, which is anybody who's on the road. I mean, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate the call. And probably for not a lot, again, this is probably not a lot of extra expense.
No, not
for the government to be providing this sort of thing.
No, not at all. And again, what it can be is it's an outreach effort. And, you know, that's something that government agencies should be doing is, you know, keeping their constituencies informed. So I'm a little biased. But yeah, it's not very expensive to do that.
Valerie in Boaz, turning to you now. Hi, Val.
Hello. I have lots to say about this topic, but I'll be trying to be brief. One, the main point is, though, I feel social media is very isolating because I choose not to embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's actually cost me several friendships that have been decades long in duration. But because I'm not following my friends onto Facebook, they've stopped emailing. Nobody makes phone calls anymore. And I represent a lot of people. I live in a rural area. I have horses. I oil paint while I'm listening to you this morning. And I just, it's not that I'm afraid. You know, I'm in my 50s. I've embraced technology in a million ways. But I don't enjoy sitting at a computer. I just don't like it. And so if you choose not to be involved in that world, you really are left out more and more. And it scares me to think what will happen over the next 30, 40 years that I might still be alive if I don't jump on that bandwagon.
And actually, there's I'm not remembering the author's name, but I think it was an article on CNN that talked about life without Facebook. And, you know, it is possible. The sun will still rise and it will still set, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a different way that people are interacting. And it's similar to the fact, for example, I don't drink coffee, which, you know, a lot of people I do business with love to meet at coffee shops. Well, I still will go to the coffee shops, and obviously they have tea and other things there that I can have, but it's something that I choose to do, but you certainly don't have to. And I think it is a matter of convenience that people will use their Facebook pages to update instead of sending 50 emails to different family members and friends to say, hey, I'm on a trip to here, and boy, look at the pictures of our vacation. It's just easier for the person to do that.
Yeah.
But I certainly respect the idea. I mean, and I don't know if there's any way to necessarily work over that feeling of isolation. I mean, you could always get an account and not post on it and just follow people, which I know a lot of people who will do that.
And then here's just a question. I'm finding as an artist that anymore when I enter shows, they're wanting my website address. And so I'm reluctantly thinking, oh, man, I should probably do a website. I'm looking into that. But then I'm wondering, is a website already passe?
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it's passe at all. And you know, one of the things I always remind clients with any social media tool is when you have a website, you own the website, but you don't know what's going to happen with Facebook's policies and changes or Twitter's policies or changes as well as Pinterest. And Pinterest was saying it, and I can't remember off the top of my head. I think they corrected this earlier this week, but they were saying that anything that's on Pinterest, they own.
Oh,
so, you know,
how do you spell Pinterest? I don't even know what that is.
Pinterest. Yep, exactly.
Pint as in Tom, Erest.
Yep. So instead of interest, it's pin, like Pinterest.
Okay.
And the idea is that you can pin things or have essentially what's like an idea board of all of the things that are interesting to you in a single place. And as an artist, I would definitely recommend checking it out. But I do think, as you know, to answer the question about the website, I am a huge advocate of maintaining your own site just because, again, you can control what's on it.
Okay.
Yep. So.
And one last question. Have you heard of Redbubble.com or Redbubble is another artist kind of website or like a social media site? Again, I'm very uninformed about it, but apparently you can post stuff on Redbubble.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one.
Okay. Well, but there's a million of them.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, well, thank you.
Well, good luck to you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling, Val. Linda in Shiocton. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am an older person now. I used to be young. And I have, I'm looking for a job.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any social network or anywhere on the internet that Is that where people are finding their jobs now? Is that all? Is that all that's being used at this point?
It's being. I'm sorry. It is being used very heavily, and part of the reason from the business end that it's being used heavily is it saves a lot of time versus having to deal with looking at resumes and looking at cover letters and looking at and bringing people into interview. It's kind of a first level weeding out process, so to speak. There's a book actually I got recently that I have not read it. The author sent it to me. It's called Job Searching on Social Media for Dummies. So it's one of the Dummies series, but it goes through a lot of the process. And basically, when we were talking about networking earlier, it's a great way for you to use the tools to start showing what it is that you can do, talking about what it is you can do, and then making connections with businesses or organizations that are looking for people with those types of skills. So, for example, there's this popular company in the social media industry called HubSpot, and a gentleman put together a website called HireMeHubSpot.com and actually purchased Facebook ads so that when people who were working at HubSpot would look on Facebook, the ads would appear. And it was all like 7 or 9 reasons why you should hire me. And so it was very creative, and it got him the job. HubSpot's for every one position, they get 300 applicants at that business. There's a lot of super creative things you can do, but that job searching for the, social media job searching for dummies or job searching on social media for dummies is a great place to check out as a resource.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. So is the traditional resume mail it to a company out?
It's going out. Yes. The more you can do to make a connection, so sending a personal letter, that still has an impact. I think that taking the time and energy to actually send something, but people want to be able to go and research about you and your content online. It's absolutely totally changed how job searching can be done.
So if you do send a letter and maybe you throw your resume in, but you direct them to
you should have your Facebook account, your Twitter handle, if you have a blog or a Pinterest account, and it should be geared towards showing why you would be an asset to whatever industry or organization you want to work with.
Wow.
Yeah. The got to have those social media stuff on your resumes now.
Well, Don, it's a real pleasure to have, and you'll come back and be with us again?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because there's plenty more we can talk about for sure. And Don Stanley will be back, and we'll do this again with him. Don owns 3 Rhino Media, a social web and strategy business. And your site, by the way, is for people to get to that.
Yep, it's 3rhinomedia.com.
3rhinomedia.com. That's the place to go to learn more. Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Stanley will be back, and we will meet and work with him again. I tell you what, that was really interesting, and it was great to hear what some people are doing and how they're connecting with classes. For example, the caller with the fourth grade students. She's got some. Those fourth graders are lucky to have her.
I really want to see her class.
And he probably will. And we've been talking about connecting with others through social media. One thing many of us have in common is a love of food, growing it, cooking it, especially eating it. Rhubarb is a favorite for many of us. And author Kim Odie is up next to talk about her new book, Rhubarb Renaissance. I hope you'll stay tuned here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.